At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
It was basically a cube with inside of sphere where the points of the cube were touching outside of the sphere.
So this isn't anything that just is limited to the United States. It's a worldwide phenomenon.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the other show on KGRA with Andy McGrillen and Dan Zetterstrom. Obviously, you can see that Andy is not here. He is unfortunately a little under the weather this week, so I'm taking the reins to speak to our guests. He's on the mend. He'll be back with us this week. And from all of us here, Andy, we miss you. Get well soon. Hearty hello as well to the fine folk over an Unidentified Celebrity Review. They just interviewed John Ramirez. Fantastic interview. Andy and I interviewed him a few weeks back, so be sure to check that out if you you haven't watched it. They picked up on a lot of things that Andy and John discussed. Quick recap of the week before I introduce our two wonderful guests you can see here. We had Representative Tim Burchett made U.S. history by speaking about UAP at the House of Representatives, which is Congress, just in case you don't know it by that name. There's clear hunger for this issue to be addressed. We had a comment from the press secretary for Gillibrand yesterday, Senator Gillibrand. And the most important bit, I think, of that was they said, while we appreciate the DOD's attention to the issue, the AOI-MSG doesn't go nearly far enough. So if you're panicking that this amendment isn't going to pass or the politicians are going to lose appetite for it, don't. We're fine. Just get in touch with your representatives. Specify that you want them to support Amendment SA-4810 so they know which one, because there's about 500 different amendments in there. And yeah, that hopefully we'll get that supported. You can support the podcast. I've got a bunch of admin to do here, guys, that Andy usually does.
You're killing it right now. You're doing a great job.
Thank you, man. So you can get 20% off Manscaped with the code ANDYUFO. You can support our show sponsors. You can get gifts for your family, friends, kill your enemies with kindness, and make sure the Tic Tacs are smooth. To support the show in other ways, you can sign up on patreon.com/thatUFOpodcast. You can also find us on Spotify Premium, Apple Podcasts with a 2-week free trial, as well as sign up via YouTube. You get some cool things like early access to interviews and members only Ask Me Anything shows. So with all that out of the way, let me introduce our first guest, a fellow member of UAP Media and creator, designer, writer, producer. I think the only thing he doesn't do is make the paper of Shadows of Your Mind magazine. This gentleman's knowledge knows no bounds, ladies and gentlemen, Dave Partridge. Thanks for joining me, Dave. How are you?
No problem, Dan. Yeah, it's nice to be invited. Shame Andy isn't here, but you know.
You're stuck with me instead, unfortunately. I hope you're okay with that.
Things I have to do.
So then I'm going to just go ahead and introduce our main guest. I've been watching Red Panda Koala. I'll say just this once, it'll be Red from now on, because that's a little bit of a mouthful. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've been watching Red's channel for years, and I think he really concisely conveys information in a really glossy and well-produced package. He covers a whole load of different areas, including Tom DeLonge, UAPs and nukes, Soviet UFOs, cattle mutilations, the Kolaris event, and many, many more. Along with channels like It's Redacted, this is one of the channels that I keep going back to time and time again. So without further ado, Red Panda Koala, how are you, my friend?
Woo! I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, guys. How are you both doing?
I'm great, thank you. Thank you for coming along.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So without further ado, we'll just dive in, because these always go by in a flash. Mm-hmm. So clearly you're a very talented documentary filmmaker. Have you always been into documentary filmmaking? Did you study it? Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
No, I didn't really study it ever. I took one video class in college, and I just made like a skate video with some friends, not like a documentary type or anything. And then I graduated college in 2016, and then I moved to LA. And then I do like documentaries, like I love watching them, but I just like never studied it. Traditionally, like history documentaries, like if I'm working or like gaming or something, I'll just have some random history documentary on in the background. So initially, I was just kind of like thinking of things to do, and I wanted to do like a Cold War history channel. So I was kind of like, I bought a computer, and like the plan was just like teach myself everything, just using the internet. You know, you can learn a lot of stuff online.
Did you go on YouTube for the tutorials?
Yeah, YouTube tutorials. It's funny, a lot. There's like some of them, it's like there's some videos that I come back to all the time, because I'll just forget like one little thing, and it's this like 11-year-old kid like teaching me how to like edit this one little thing. And then yeah, so I was saving up money, and then I got into like a car accident. I was totally safe, it wasn't my fault. That happened in November of 2017. So then I was like, oh sweet, I'm gonna get a bunch of money to be able to start my Cold War channel with this computer that I'm gonna buy. And then like in between the time I had my car accident and the settlement or whatever dispersed is when the UFO stuff happened. And then I was like, oh, whoa, this is pretty intense. I never really thought it, like, I never deep dove into it before. So I kind of had, like, an opinion of, like, oh, just the classic, like, oh, I think they could be there, but I don't know if they're here. You know, like, the never really thought about it opinion. And then, yeah, that's when the New York Times article broke. And I started my deep dive then. And then when I was doing my deep dive, I was like, oh, there's really, like, a space that I could just probably just do a UFO channel instead, because I was like trying to find videos of basically like what I make now, like kind of like that kind of style. And a lot of times it's like PowerPoint presentation type, or just kind of like lectures or long form interviews, which are all great. But like not everyone has like a lot of time for that kind of stuff. So that's kind of like where the idea for my whole channel came. It was just like the UFO information that I found interesting, that I wish would have already been a video when I just gone into this.
That's really cool. You kind of covered my next question in that, so I'm just gonna go ahead and take that one. But I'm wondering how did you find your way to the UFO subject, or did it do you feel it kind of found you? Was it December 2017 definitely, or was there anything before?
No, that was really it. I had like a family friend who growing up was into UFOs, and we would talk about it, like, but I never did a deep dive, and I was like 8 when those conversations were happening. And then when I was growing up, my family and I would drive and listen to Coast, but that was just kind of like for fun. I never really deep dove it until the 2017 article dropped, to my own disappointment and shame. I feel like people who were into it before 2017 have like a little bit of a flex that they'll always have.
Yeah, are we like the hipsters of the UFO community?
Yeah.
Almost, yeah.
So just jumping right into your videos, one of the ones I keep going back to are the Tom DeLonge timeline videos, because they're, you know, just so much happened across so many years. And unless you were paying attention, you know, as a fan of Tom or as a fan of UFOs and that subject, you just would have missed a lot. And they really chart the story from Tom's outlandish claims to him being proven to be honest and correct. Can you just, I don't know how much you remember of it, but I was wondering if you could just hit the main beats, just to say kind of what stood out to you there.
Sure. Yeah. So, and this is kind of like, goes back into like the whole why I make the channel thing. And another reason too is like, when I saw the 2017 stuff, I was super excited and like looking for someone to talk about it, and like no one was interested in it. And then, so if you try to explain to someone like why you should care about what Tom DeLonge says, you know what I mean? You're going to be talking to them. Like my videos, I think are like 50 minutes for the two parts. And those are like concise. So, yeah, basically that was like a, and I had seen that was like a very important subject to ufology that hadn't really been kind of all pieced together like that. Like Ross Coulthart did a good job piecing that timeline together too. That came out, I think, a few years after though. So yeah, I was like, this is like an important aspect of modern ufology. And there's all these, like, every day there's a new Reddit post about it, and people are like trying to figure out and like post his interview and stuff. So yeah, I was like, okay, I'm just going to make the timeline of everything he said regarding this subject. And for people who don't know, I broke it up into two parts. The first part is about how he got his information, or he claims to have gotten his information, which we could go into more detail right after I break this down. And then the second part is I basically take all the little bits of information that he said about UFOs and put that into a timeline. And just disclaimer, I'm not end of my videos too, I say like, I'm not saying to believe Tom DeLonge 100% by any means, but this is an important, like, he's integral to where we are right now. And it's important that people are at least aware of like what he's saying and what he thinks these things are, for everyone to make their own decisions on what these things are, I guess. And so, yeah, doing that deep dive, I basically just like listened to a bunch of his interviews from the time period when he was speaking. For people who don't know, there's like a sweet spot where he claims to have had his advisors, and he was just going on like Jimmy Church and Linda Moulton Howe and Joe Rogan and just kind of like talking his mouth off, maybe to like his own detriment or something. But yeah, so I listened to those and put those all in order, and just basically, yeah, the story of how Tom DeLonge, this rock star from Blink-182, well, no, he's like a rock star, but just his like inclusion in this whole story of like disclosure, how he was involved. And basically he and I'm actually curious to get your guys' opinions on this, but he like he says like he went to Lockheed Martin, and basically like because of his celebrity, and these companies do this often, like you'll see like companies will just bring random celebrities to just speak to their employees or like to their family nights, so that part isn't really too crazy to me. But he was basically able to like network and mingle with UFO people to like start this whole disclosure initiative, and that's where he met like Steve Justice, and then through Justice met other people, and who Neil McCaslin, General Neil McCaslin, and all that stuff. So just trying to like set the foundation of like these are like pretty high credentialed people who he's for sure we know in contact with, and who he's claiming he's getting his information from, so that way when we go over the information, it like makes sense. But oh, what I was going to say to you guys is, do you guys think that his whole like went to Lockheed Martin episode, like how much of it do you think was him, and how much of it do you think was like they totally knew what he was going to do like before he even got there, you know what I mean? What are you guys thoughts? Curious.
Dave, we haven't heard from you yet, so please go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think I mean, like you, like Red said, you know, these big companies will get in celebrities, whether, you know, like Christmas parties or anniversary, that kind of thing. They'll hire the band or, you know, these people just to put on a show for their employees as a gesture of goodwill. Things like that. I know that the motorsport Formula One teams do it quite often at their Christmas parties. They'll get in like these big stars just to put on a show, and then they'll mingle with the rest of the crowd. But yeah, I mean, if Tom DeLonge, you know, if he was meeting with Steve Justice and some of the other people at Skunk Works and being shown around the facilities, and, you know, being shown perhaps blueprints or plans for stuff that they're working on, then that makes sense that he's going to go and take that and give it to, you know, probably hint towards that with other people that he meets later on down the line.
Yeah, that's interesting. So kind of like, you know, we always talk about the information being in stovepipes. So in effect, Tom connected a few of the stovepipes and may have gotten a few people talking that weren't before, I guess, or made them aware of certain things they weren't aware of before. That's interesting.
Yeah, so it's like, what degree of it is like Tom is low-key this brilliant Machiavellian schemer who's just playing off everyone's like what they know and don't know, and what degree of it is like somebody above Tom that we don't even know about thought that this might be a good person to like ease it. Because one of the theories I have of why like he's even involved is because it kind of gives them like an out for a bit. You know what I mean? Because he's kind of so out there and he's so, you know what I mean? It's not like the president or something. He's crazy. 100%. He has all these naked pics from the 90s and stuff like that. So if they wanted to pull back, they could have easily done that maybe for that first little window. But I don't know. It's all speculation still. We'll probably all die not knowing the real reason.
I mean,
it almost got totally derailed by the WikiLeaks thing as well.
Greg Cameron says that too. And
Tom described it as the information being shut off from a Castland as a faucet being turned off. So it blows my mind to think that the stacked lineup of TTSA was actually Plan B in effect. They've done a really, really good job, all things considered. But I'd love to hear from Neil McCasland. I'm sure we all would.
And he's one of the ones I think.
So part two of those videos includes a kind of overarching theory of UAP, not necessarily your overarching theory, but the one Tom presented. It involves consciousness being influenced by beings that used to be referred to as the Greek gods and many other figures worshipped throughout history. And this no doubt links into why the phenomenon is considered demonic by some as they see the world through a kind of religious lens. So I wanted to know what your thoughts on that aspect of the story, because for some people it kind of gets quite scary at this point. Is it too much for you, or do you find it intriguing?
I would say, like, when it comes to the whole overarching UFO subject, I'm kind of a doomer compared to some of the other people, just because, like, and we'll probably talk about this too, my Kolaris video and stuff, there's evidence of like it's not all just positive vibe experiences and information downloads of love or something. So in terms of that, like, I do agree with Tom that, and like the whole trickster element, and like that Jacques Vallée has said that these things impersonate each other, or they can manipulate our emotions. I just think that they're just, all of their operations come from like a base level of deceit towards our species. So it's like, you can't even trust the good, the bad. It's all just like, not good, in my opinion. Well, no, not all not good, but you just can't trust it, because people have been told a bunch of stuff. If like some of the abduction stuff, which, you know, it's, people are iffy if you're nuts and bolts, but there's like some interesting abduction stuff where it's like people get told like things and they're lied to basically and taken advantage of in like very inappropriate ways. So yeah, I don't know. I think Tom gets a lot of flack, and Lou doesn't even really say the threat like as much as he could, in my opinion. He just says like they could hit our planes, but I think it's a lot, like there's a lot more than that.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think humanity at large would be ready for that conversation yet, or do you think we have a ways to go?
I'm gonna be honest, I don't really know, and I lean towards no. And I just feel like from the picture that I'm kind of painting for myself of like what might be behind this phenomenon, or like what actions this phenomena takes, like it seems kind of like not all good. And I know I don't even have the full picture, so I can only imagine what the full picture is, like some of the intelligence community and stuff. Luis Jimenez had a good point when I went on his show, and he was saying, because I always think like if a modern day Kolaris happened, which maybe we should, for the listeners, just do a quick little, just 2 minute
spiel. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have a question down the road on Kolaris where I was going to ask you to just hit on it, because I don't think many people really know, and you did quite an extensive series on it. So yeah, please take the time.
Yeah, so for the listeners, Kolaris was this UFO flap that happened in 1977 to 78 in Brazil. And I found it really important to cover this because there's a few reasons. So one, it has a bunch of witnesses and over 100 for sure, probably. And these range from farmers to fishermen to police officers to police chiefs to city councilors and to mayors. So like all across the spectrum. And this town started having all these UFO sightings, but what was really tragic about it is that these UFOs weren't just like being seen. They were actively like attacking people, and people were getting like radiation burns. They were called chupa chupa, which means suck suck in Portuguese, because people felt like they were sucking their blood. But typical stuff, like people would say, oh, I was paralyzed and this glowing orb was moving around my room and like hovering over like me and my family, and then it just left And then we all felt like horrible for a few days. So that's one aspect of it, is that there's so many people, there's so many, there's only like one doctor in the town, but she's on the record saying, like, at first I didn't believe it either, but there all these people started coming in with like radiation burns and like unable to move and stuff like that. And then another interesting aspect of it is, because it was such a high profile kind of flap, and by a few months in, mayors were contacting like governors and the military and stuff to intervene. The military eventually does intervene, and they sent a small team, you know, not like some huge crazy team. I think it was like 10 people or so, but eventually these 10 people started having like experiences too. And they had originally went there to go dispel, to like calm the area, but they ended up having their own like orb sightings, and one of them even had a humanoid encounter with like a gray being. And then the Brazilian government did cover it up, quote unquote. They said that it was all because of like lighthouses offshore. So there's that angle of like cover up. There's also the angle of like, this is a foreign country, because people are always like, why is it always America? And then another important thing is that in 2004, AJ Guevara, who's like a really prominent, I'd say the most prominent Brazilian UFO researcher, he led this, political action group or something, and tried to declassify some of these files, and the Brazilian government and Air Force actually did. So for a while, some of these files were out there, like I think in the 90s and late 80s, they were out there, but they had never really been confirmed. But then the Brazilian government released some of these files in 2004. And so, yeah, those are like the main reasons why I really wanted to tell this story. It was, one, all these witnesses; two, it's not all pretty, and it's fairly well documented as far as the UFO case is going to go. Three, it's in a foreign country; four, the government officially declassified stuff after covering it up, after saying it was a lighthouse, you know what I mean? So all those beats, I think, make for a really compelling case. And it's not really one that's talked about too much. And you definitely don't hear people who are like love and light only ever reference it. So yeah, that's.
Am I correct in thinking that Robert Bigelow owns all the Kolaris files now? He bought them or obtained them during the OSAP and BASS.
Yeah. And so that's another part too, is of course it ties in Bigelow at the end of it, right? At the very end, I think like somewhere around 2002 to 2008-ish. I believe Kevin Knuth, who was the Marine aviator who was originally like going to see the, or not Kevin Knuth, I'm forgetting his name, but there was a Marine aviator who was supposed to see the 2004 Tic Tac who joined BASS after that guy. I think he went to Brazil for that trip.
Kurth,
maybe. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But according to them, yeah, Bigelow got a lot of the files, and maybe even some of the files that weren't declassified, because they declassified photos and like reports written by the military personnel, but they didn't, I don't think, to my knowledge, have declassified film roll, like a Super 8 film roll they had allegedly has been claimed by multiple people. And I don't think that's been declassified. And I think Bigelow might be sitting on that. So.
Interesting. I guess that would be in the data warehouse that Colin Keller refers to in their interviews. And maybe even the yearly reports. I know Tim McMillan has seen one of those. He got to have a gander through, but not share it with us. So I wonder if we could ask him specifically if he saw any Kolaris stuff.
Yeah. And Hal Puthoff mentioned it recently. People mention it Hal Puthoff mentioned it. So it's in their zeitgeist. They know about it.
Yeah, 100%. So you said December 2017 was kind of your genesis point, or your origin story, we'll say. Mm-hmm. Since then, what would you say has kind of been, let's say, pick three of your the most important developments for you in this conversation since then?
Like, that have happened since then? Like,
yeah.
Okay. What we talked about earlier, that Tim Burchett on the floor of the house, like yesterday or whenever that was, saying like the American people can handle the truth was pretty dramatic. But let's see, what did some... I guess just learning the details of the Nimitz case, because that one's really like, I think, a really solid go-to for a lot of people. And just all the like flight characteristics of the Tic Tac and how there's multiple witnesses and all that jazz. Another big important things, I guess, and this kind of goes into another one of my videos. When I learned about the Chinese initiative, although I think it's kind of stalled, but there's like a Chinese initiative to basically what ICER is doing, the International Coalition of Extraterrestrial Research or whatever. They basically got all these UFO researchers to come to China, or to come to Russia, China and then Russia. But basically they're propping up this whole thing like they were going to create their own UN initiative. Although that kind of panned out after the pandemic, and it looks like a lot of those people moved to ICER and are kind of just trying to do it outside of the Chinese, I don't know, guys or whatever. But that, learning about that was pretty interesting, because I was like, okay, this is another country that's, for better or worse, taking this seriously. And then when they released that they also have their own UAPTF, basically, that was a pretty big moment. Because, yeah, a lot of criticism you hear is just like, why is it only America? Why is it only this or that? And then, so learning about like other countries doing it is pretty interesting. And then, let's see, what's a third really important thing?
I might be putting you on the spot with that number. I picked it arbitrarily, so if you can't think of one, that's fine.
I guess, no, just like the general progression of everything. What I try and try and do with my channel is I try and keep the history alive, because I feel like the government is actively trying to like not keep the history alive with only going back to 2004. And even in the UFO community, I feel like sometimes we forget. So just seeing the constant stream of just like Congress people talking about it, or like talking crap about AOMSG or whatever, and seeing that they got briefed and they're talking about it, like that's all fairly novel stuff. And like, yes, sure, some similar things happened in the past, but I don't think it's ever been like this level of just new week, new person talking about it who's respected in society. So those three things.
Cool. You kind of touched on it a little bit there, but I was going to ask you about the United Nations and you know what happened in San Marino recently. You know, they're supposedly being asked to take it forward to the UN. And I wanted to ask, if that was to happen, what would you like to see come out of it?
If that was to happen, maybe just like an international UAPTF, and maybe some kind of international amnesty thing. I know that's kind of a controversial thing, but I think, and we're kind of seeing this on UFO Twitter and stuff too, I think like the just getting everything out there is more important than like covering up for some crimes or the political opinions of whoever's trying to get the information out, as much as it might suck and as much as you might not agree with it all. I think it's just more important to get that out. So I do think an important aspect of all of this is the amnesty thing. And reason I say that is because like this was actively covered up for decades across multiple countries. And you don't get to do that by just like being pretty about it and smiling. Like, I do personally believe horrible stuff has happened to keep this secret, and stuff that I think we'd all be horrified by. So I think if there's not some kind of like amnesty on the table, we won't get what we want. And as much as I don't like the cover up, although I kind of go back and forth on that, but as much as I like, you know, wish it was all out there, and I don't like what some of the actions they did, definitely don't like the murdering people over it and stuff like that, to be clear. I think it's more important to just get the information out.
Yeah, because I think that's something that's unspoken when people talk about disclosure, is the potentiality of lawsuits coming in against governments and against the military from, you know, people who have been affected by this physically, mentally, and, you know, that is, I think that's possibly one thing that's holding it back at the moment as well. Because once someone gets, you know, takes the government to court or the military to court and actually gets a payout, you know, similar to John Burroughs did after Rendlesham.
100%.
Once you open those floodgates, you know, who knows where that's going to stop.
And Luz even said, if aerospace companies got access to certain tech and others didn't, you know, and that gave them a huge leap, or there's a lot of like, yeah, money and pain involved with like uncovering this all up. And that's another thing that I think people don't really talk about when we're talking about this subject or in mainstream media. It's like, okay, yes, we're talking about UFOs now, but there's a reason we're only talking about it now. And like TikTok was even 2004. Like, there's a history of covering this up that I think the media isn't really touching yet. And I think when they do, people will be like, oh, it's not good stuff. Because people get like, you know what I mean? There's like in the 70s when the CIA was all exposed and stuff, it caused quite a stir and stuff. So I imagine probably like a similar thing to like what happened with that whole thing.
Yeah.
So some of your videos are on Soviet UAP encounters, and their studies really go well beyond just seeing, you know, lights in the sky. They were as curious about this stuff as the USA and the rest of us, I think, including yeah. the kind of the psychic spy studies. I'll do that in air quotes because it's mm-hmm. not, you know, it's a broad stroke. So you obviously poured, like you say, you do deep dives. So you kind of really poured over the USSR, Russia stuff. And it's debated in the community because we haven't seen a lot of the paperwork and we don't know the chain of custody of a lot of it. And we wonder if it's disinformation or anything like that. So I wanted to ask what your kind of main takeaway and impression was from doing the deep dive on the Russia documents.
Yeah. And I'll just preface, I probably have to do an even deeper dive on just like an overall Russia one, because the Soviet videos I've covered for the audience, one I did was on Marina Popovich, who was this, well, I say she's a cosmonaut. Some people say she's not a cosmonaut because she never technically went to space, but she like trained, she got accepted into the cosmonaut program. In my opinion, that still counts. And she had her own UFO experiences. And so from what, and my other video was on this girl named Ninel Kulagina, who was studied by the Soviets, who allegedly, to follow you, Dan, had telekinetic powers. And I know it sounds so crazy, and I'm not saying to believe it by any means, but what's interesting about it is like there's a lot of people who corroborate her claims, who are very esteemed and established within like science and stuff like that. So my understanding of, and I've obviously done more reading since then, but as far as my video goes, my understanding from the Soviet Union was kind of through their two lenses. And so for Marina Popovich, she would say that like, yeah, they had the same kind of stigma to where people wouldn't report things. And like, if you reported things, you basically like get sent to a loony bin, I think is what she said. So there's that. And then through her life too, we also learned that like after the fall of the Soviet Union is when this stuff was kind of allowed to be talked about more. And she and some others, and even her ex-husband, Pavel Popovich, had his own UFO sighting, and he was outspoken about it. So after the fall of the Soviet Union, more people were talking. But yeah, like you said, I would like to see those documents. And I feel, didn't George Knapp or someone say he's seen them or something like that? I thought.
Yeah, he brought some back and presented them to OSHAP and Bass.
Yeah.
And it was like they managed to do like a family tree of the organizations within the Russian government, within the Russian military. And they actually found that there was one unit which was kind of running it all, but they never quite found out.
Oh, nice.
how far that was involved. Yeah,
sounds like a future video for me for sure, because like I was saying, from the Soviet videos I have covered, it's kind of just from their perspective at all. So like one like that would be really cool. I have to DM you and Knapp and Putin.
I think there's, he mentions it in Skinwalkers of the Pentagon book.
Oh really? Nice.
Yeah,
nice, really cool. So yeah, and so back to the general, I think they were definitely studying it. I just don't think you can. And then, oh, what are some things? She had friends in intelligence. So here's a little like peek. And she said her friends in intelligence were under the impression that Roswell was a legitimate crash, like from the Soviet perspective. So, I mean, take that however you want. She could have been lied to by someone. She could have whatever. But as far as she was understood it, that's what she understood. So that was another interesting tidbit.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Kind of like it makes me think of the Foo Fighters, how both sides were blaming each other, but both kind of thinking it was the other side.
Yeah.
So we'll just move on to some audience questions. We have a question from Murph. He says, Red Panda Koala has produced some great videos, so thank you very much. If you had to pick between extraterrestrial, interdimensional, crypto-terrestrial, or a combination, which would you go for and why? I think kind of your favorite theory, I think.
Yes. Are you saying you think you know what mine is?
Oh no.
Sorry. Okay.
I would like to know what your favorite your pet theory is.
Maybe like whatever it is 50% interdimensional, a quarter crypto, a quarter extraterrestrial. I don't know. you know, but I feel like we all probably do this too, right? We're always bouncing around like what we think it might be, or what if it's all BS? Like,
yeah, yeah, 100%.
Just laying up at night looking up. But yeah, I'd probably go towards like interdimensional. I definitely don't. I think the strict biological, like ET from another civil planet, Star Wars type situation, I think that's a little less likely from what I've seen, although those probably exist. But as far as like what's been interacting with us, and at least the like stuff you hear from like Lou and like Tom and Jacques Vallée and Bigelow and like some of these people who are like don't obviously believe 100% whatever they say, but they kind of know more than probably a lot of us do, that kind of leans towards that way. So yeah, I'd say a little interdimensional, a lot of trickster, like, yeah, I'm not as opposed to Dino Beaver as some people are, is like I guess a good way to put it.
So Michaela would like to know, she says there are many different books and she doesn't really know where to start. What would be the main reads that you'd suggest and why? I know you have a video that's kind of like a top 10, so yeah, go for it.
Great question. So yeah, I do have a video that's a top 10, and the video it's like the first in a series. So this one was top 10 nuts and bolts UFO books to come out since 2000. Which I feel like is a good place to start. And then I'll eventually do like top 10 nuts and bolts pre-2000, woo-woo, post-2000 fiction books. But for someone new to it, I would say, I think like some of the best ones are Richard Dolan's, what is it? UFOs in the National Security State. And then the Robert Powell and UFO book. Which one is that too? Darn it. Let me see. I guess I should look it up. Well, do you guys know what I'm talking about? It's like the red and white one. It's like Robert Powell.
Cover.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So for sure, it'll be in the show notes. The Robert Powell book and the Richard Dolan ones; those ones are really good, of just like the entire story, more or less. And I typically find whenever I'm researching a book or something, I'll definitely like I have those books in e-copy, so I'll like Control F like any particular terms that I'm coming across in research, just to like cross-check against those, see if there's maybe something I missed. But those ones are also kind of like very intense, like history kind of books, which I personally love. But some people, maybe if you're looking for more of a narrative, Ross Coulthart's book is pretty good. And like, kind of, I feel like reads more like a typical read that you would have as opposed to like a history book. Although all three of those are good. That's what I would recommend. But yeah, that's what I recommend.
Nice. I'm going to throw that one to you as well, Dave, because I know you have a few favorites. Yes.
And I'll find the cover. I'll find that book while he's in it.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
I mean, I agree in part with Red, but, you know, Richard Dolan's books, the UFOs in the National Security State, yes, they are in depth, but, you know, Dolan is a historian at heart anyway. He started off looking at the Cold War and then eventually stumbled into UFOs and took it from there. But my personal favourites, I prefer the older books. So like from the 50s, 60s and 70s. You know, if you want to start right at the beginning, then go for Major Donald Kehoe's books. You know, especially his very early ones where he had access to American Air Force pilots who could talk freely about what they've seen up to like 1952 or 53, when they got the whole thing just got shut down. I think Edward Ruppelt's book as well. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but yeah, that's a great place to start. And then you start, you know, getting into the whole Blue Book thing. I'd say Jacques Vallée as well. I know you put the Forbidden Science books in your top 10 list as well, Red.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, those are great. Those are his note, like he just was taking notes, I guess, every decade he was around, which is a great little historical nugget of just like the world of ufology in the time of that, like it was not allowed. And yeah, I totally agree. I think the Ruppelt book, it for sure is probably gonna be like the number one in my pre-2000. That guy is, I think, probably one of the most important people ever.
Sean would like to know, do you think the others are influencing Disclosure?
I would say, I don't know for sure, obviously, but I would say I wouldn't be surprised if they are. And I wouldn't be surprised if they have a lot of influence on like our world that we just don't really realize. So I guess just nice and short, wouldn't be surprised.
Nice. So that's appropriate because we're going to jump into a kind of mini quick fire now. This is for both of you. So I'm just going to run through them. Just tell me your thoughts quickly on the subjects. And yeah. So thoughts on ball lightning. Red, you go first.
Pretty interesting. I honestly need to probably do a bigger deep dive. I think that one video that everyone posts is fake, right? With the railroad and it's like Russia.
Yeah, yeah, that's that right. That was a CG project for some kid. And he came out and admitted it, but it still gets passed around as the genuine article. You know?
So I don't think like a lot of the orbs and stuff, I don't think are that. Or it's a convenient cover, I guess is what I would say for a lot of things. But interesting still.
Cool. Dave?
Yeah, I mean, it's a phenomenon which isn't seen that often, and when it does, it can freak people out, which is, you know, no surprise why, you know, someone will think that holy moly, let's say that's an orb or a UFO. It's easily mistakable.
Yeah, for sure. So your thoughts on the and you mentioned Ross Coulthard, so you're probably aware of it. The kind of competing timelines and time travel hypothesis of the visitors. I wanted to ask you both what you thought of that.
I've been seeing the timeline stuff pop up on UFO Twitter a lot. I don't know if I personally think that, or like the future human theory and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if I haven't seen enough to like make me think that's 100% the case. Maybe. I think these things like manipulate time in a sense of like the way they move probably from the inside the Tic Tac, like is manipulated time compared to outside. But as far as like Back to the Future style, we're going to punch in this date, go here and bounce out. I don't know if I agreed with that.
Dave?
It's difficult because, you know, the way pop culture is at the moment, we got Loki, you know, the whole Marvel cinematic universe dealing with timelines at the moment. You know, is that bringing that conversation into ufology, and are people using that to try and explain something which, you know, they probably haven't thought of before? You know, future progeny as well, you know, is it future us coming back to warn us that we're about to destroy the planet, and if we don't buck up our ideas, then, you know, they won't survive, kind of thing. I think that was explored in the recent Canal Plus War of the Worlds series. For people who have seen that, for people who haven't seen it, I'll stop there.
I felt like that one, it started pretty well, the first episode kind of captured the anxiety and panic of what that moment would look like on the ground level. But yeah, don't watch the two seasons, I would say. Aside from Kolaris, what would be your favorite UFO case, Red?
Okay, aside from Kolaris, and then we'll also say aside from Nimitz, because that's like basic too, right?
Oh, nice. Good chat. Thank you for closing that loophole for me.
We'll say is the 1952 over DC, is that too basic too, or is that...
No, that's a great one.
And I don't know if you guys saw my most recent posted one, which covers like Al Chop and like all that stuff. So that's kind of fresh in my mind to a degree. Right now I'm in the trenches for Edgar Mitchell, so like my mind is all Edgar Mitchell. But that one is really interesting because lots of witnesses, lots of credible witnesses, you know what I mean? Like Al Chop was a great guy. Multiple airline pilots see these things over DC. And then also what's really interesting about that is you could really see like an immediate call to action on parts of the government and stuff directly after that, which I think adds more credence to the sighting. Like the Robertson panel was like directly after that. Grudge was reformed to Blue Book directly after that, and was basically like confirmed to be like a debunking thing by that point. So basically just the government's reaction in the wake of that event, kind of similar to Roswell, where you just see all these like this event happens and like now everything's kind of changing and shuffling around. And so I think that's probably one of my favorite ones, the 1952 over DC.
Cool. And for you, Dave?
Yeah, I think I'm going to, I mean, I've spoken about it many times on various different podcasts, and that's
not on here, not tonight. So
it's the Welsh sighting, the Welsh Triangle, basically 1977, 78 sightings. Around Broadhaven, Milford Haven. It's called the Duffield Enigma. And there's a few books from 1978 which explore the phenomena in detail with interviews with some of the main witnesses, and just to get a feeling of this small corner of Wales, which is populated by, you know, farmers and mining communities, to be describing what they're describing without having the influence of science fiction, you know, being prominent in their lives. You know, it's quite a good study on what was going on at the time.
Oh, well, I'm going to have to look into that case because I don't even know anything about it. And if it's one of your favorites, that's like that's...
It went on for a good 18 months, I think.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, see, that's like the thing about this.
Crafts and everything. You know, suited figures, lights in the sky. Yeah.
Suited, like Men in Black type people, like suited?
No, more like, well, there was two instances of Men in Black, yeah, driving a silver Rolls Royce and interrogating a couple of families. There was a trans medium incident, well, more than one, where the owner of a local hotel saw a craft heading for these rocks just off the shore and just saw the craft disappear. And she was waiting for the massive explosion and it never happened. And then she just saw these two figures appearing on these rocks as if they're walking downstairs and then going, you know, underneath. And apparently some diver went down there and discovered a steel door in the rocks, but whether that's, you know, whether that's genuine or not, still up for debate.
I mean, if we can fund a training course and get a diving suit, I don't live too far from there. I'll go look.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you guys are close.
I was just diving. Yeah, I'm so. I live on the southern tip of Wales, and we actually kind of get a lot of activity. And my mum's seen a few things. There was something around Cardiff Airport when I was growing up that I vaguely remember, but she called the airport to ask about it, and apparently wasn't the only one. But we live in this big kind of. It's a magnetic anomaly, and if that has anything to do with the phenomena, then yeah, we live in kind of this big swath of pink on the anomaly maps. So yeah, interesting.
Like Skinwalker
mining around.
Well, like you went to basin level of like low key of activity in that area. Sounds like
yeah, maybe? Definitely. In Pembrokeshire as well. So. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, there was bilocation of cattle at one point. Cattle mutilations, all sorts of things going on there. It's quite an incredible time.
Sounds like a future video for sure. I'll DM you, get some more information about those books and stuff. It's crazy. Sure. I feel like I've literally been nonstop deep diving this since 2017, and you're still like learning stuff that's like your favorite case. Like that must be a good one, right? You know what I mean? So the subject, that's why part of why I make the videos too, is because there's just so much to read, and like there's so much that people have to. Like 10 years probably, like before I feel like I kind of have a fairly good understanding.
Oh yeah, you can spend a fortune. Yeah. So
sorry, I was just looking. Someone asked if I could fit some questions in, and I can find them. If you could post them again, the username is goof. Yeah, if you could post them again, I will ask them gladly. So just before those come up, that's actually really strange. The next one is cattle mutilation. Someone just posted about cattle mutilations. So I kind of wanted your kind of theory on why it may be happening, because it's a little disturbing. And part of me wonders, like, could it have happened to people around? You know, Kolaris was almost, you know.
So to answer those questions, I definitely don't know why it happens. And I don't even really like have an idea of like why it might happen. But to the other part, I'll just say I wouldn't be surprised if it happens to humans. And there's some fairly like we're on the UFO stuff, right? So it's like it's not like 100%, but there's fairly compelling cases and pictures and images, and a lot of them from Brazil even, that make me think that yeah, it's probably happening to humans too. And if you look at like missing 411 type stuff, I feel like that's kind of just like similar situation of just I think what they do to cows they probably do to humans too, is basically just the easy way of saying it. And then there's some what Bigelow's study I think said that they might have been studying prions or something like that in the meat. And there's some people who said, I think Alien Scientist says that it's governments trying to test, because they're doing all these underground nuclear atomic tests, and they're just trying to test the meat to make sure that it's not messing up like our ecosystem as Americans. But as far as like why they do it, I really don't know. And yeah, to the human thing, I would not be surprised. What about you guys? What do you guys think?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the seeing whether all these nuclear tests are affecting the food chain, I think that's one plausible explanation for sure. But of course, the you know, the Linda Moulton Howe documentary Strange Harvest kind of kicked it all off back in the late 70s, and, you know, got people's awareness into the subject again. So I think people should check that out for sure.
Yeah, and I referenced that in my cat mutilation video, like how much of a pioneer she was with that documentary.
Absolutely, yeah.
The prions thing is interesting to me, but there are so many events where, you know, the cows are instantly in the trailer and I'm like, okay, you know, sure, the government, it makes sense for them to track that and so on and so forth, but there seems to be happenings that are way outside of our abilities when it comes to some of these cattle mutilations. But again, it could still be, you know, if we went to a planet, we would try and catalog these things. So, you know, it could be a similar reason, but just the wrong people blaming, I guess. So for the last part of the show, I was going to go into Hollywood and UFOs, but we have 4 minutes left, so we kind of have to wrap up. So I know, right? So I'll tease it for next time, because Andy and I will no doubt use Hollywood and UFOs for our next show. But just to close out, can I get both of your favorite UFO movies and why?
You want to go first, Dave?
Yeah, I was thinking.
It's a big question, I know.
Okay. Yeah. I'm ready then.
All right, yeah, you go and I'll give it a thought.
Okay. So this is kind of also kind of like a shilling my channel moment, but I think that the UFO movie that came out in 1956 is pretty much like one of the best UFO films ever made. And for people who don't know, this was like my most recent video. This movie came out in 1956 and it was really significant because it had three whistleblower members of Project Blue Book. It had Edward Ruppelt, it had Al Chop, and it had Dewey Fournay as technical advisors to this film. And they had all been like disaffected or really turned off by what had happened following the 1952 wave over DC, which was basically like the more or less the closing down of Blue Book, just repainting like a name on it or whatever. And what I didn't even know about that is that movie came out before Edward Ruppelt's book. So technically, I think it's like one of the first records of any kind of whistleblower for UFOs. And I think it like would have inspired Ruppelt like to write his book. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, and I never really made that timeline connection. I always thought Ruppelt's book was like the first starting point. Technically, this film came out before. So I think that's really significant. And it's actually pretty, it's charming. You know what I mean? Like it's from the 50s. So it's like very different pace and kind of than what we would make today, but it's charming. And you could tell like the people involved, like really were trying to start something. They were really trying to be like proto TTSA, proto Lou Elizondo. And you know what I mean? And just the where we've come since then. And just knowing that they tried it so early, I just have like so much respect. Like how I was telling you guys, like people pre 2017, it's like, wow, you guys have clout, but like they were like pre Ruppelt's book, you know what I mean? Like, so that's mine.
Yeah, nice. I mean, I think I'd have to probably, you know, one that I've really resonated with me in the last 12 months would be the Abyss. Basically because it starts off with a USO encounter that damages an American nuclear submarine, and then that sets up the rest of the story. I mean, you're dealing there with the crypto-terrestrial theory as well. And the fact that there's this species that has lived at the bottom of this trench in the ocean, because it's kind of like akin to conditions on their own planet, their home planet or wherever they're from. But the other one I possibly suggest is the first X-Files movie, mainly because I was of an age where it made a great impression on me at the time. And really got me studying into this.
Well, when did that come out?
Oh, I don't know. I want to say 98, 99, maybe.
Oh, I'll have to check out both of those movies.
Possibly earlier than that.
Yeah, that feels about right. I'm going to choose a lesser known one called Phoenix Forgotten. Not many people have seen this one, never gets spoken about, but it's a found footage movie based around the Phoenix Light. And it's really well put together, and it was produced by Jerry Bruckheimer's production company, and it blows my mind every time I watch it. And I'm just like, damn, this is really good. The whole framing of the found footage, it actually justifies why you're watching in found footage for the whole film. So you know, I'm so down. I liked it. But yeah, you should watch it. It's fairly short, about 90 minutes, I think. So it gets in, gets out, and is a pretty good experience.
Very cool.
Cool. So, Red, tell people where they can find your work.
Yeah, so it's Red Panda Koala on YouTube. And that name just comes from, I just like both of those animals. And at first I wanted to put something UFO in my name, but then I was like, there's a lot of UFO names out there. Sorry, like not in a bad way, but it's just like, I might as well just do something a little different. And yeah, Red Panda Koala on YouTube, Red Panda Koala on Twitter, and all my documentaries are free on YouTube. Yeah, I hope you guys check them out. That UFO podcast family, check it out.
Cool, definitely. Like I say, I've followed your channel for years, so it's
oh, really wait, nice. Yeah, real quick, I had a question. I was curious, how did you come across my channel first? And Dave, I don't know if you came across it before today, but...
So I just consume anything and everything UFO that I possibly can. And one of your videos popped up. I think it was on Reddit. And then I just kind of followed from there. Yeah.
Nice, Dave? Cool.
Yeah, I think I saw someone was recommending it on Twitter about 18 months ago. And I just, you know, dove in.
Cool. Very cool.
Nice. So just to close out, I'll remind people we're running a raffle to raise some money for the St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital and the Humane Society International. We are raffling off, I can just chuck it up real quick here. Here we go. You guys can see that. So we are raffling off this poster here signed by Lou when we met him in London. We've raised over £2,000 at the moment, which is absolutely insane. It'll be closing out on Christmas Eve. You can buy 10 entries for £10. The more you buy, the cheaper the entries get. And the person who donates the highest amount during the run will actually get a personal thank you call from Lou Elizondo himself, which is crazy. Cool. Thank you to Lou for donating that. So, yeah.
There he goes.
Well, gentlemen, we're going to wrap the show because it's that time. So I think Dan is trying to come back. I think he's coming back now.
Oh. I'm back. I did so well with my mute button up until I hit that leave studio thing. I was just trying to unchip my screen, but yeah, brilliant.
All right, Dan, take us out.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Thank you very much, everyone. With that, we're all out of time this week. Thank you to Dave and Red Panda Koala for joining the show. And for all their amazing work helping to streamline the subject for those coming in. Andy should be back with us this week, and let's all send in healing thoughts. Keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet, and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access the shows ad-free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, That UFO Podcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's @UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer. More like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
For the Parliament of Fools. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.